Humanity is in trouble. Some of us are here to help. Together, we will take the next step.
Welcome back to the Next Step Podcast. I hope you're doing well. It's been a while since you've heard from me, and it's been a while since I've heard from you. I'm pretty flaky about posting new episodes, as you've probably learned by now, but I have a good feeling that the summer of 2011 will see quite a few things being posted on this feed, so while I don't want you to hold your breath in anticipation of new episodes, I definitely recommend that you watch this space, as they say. So, what is on today's menu? Today is a lost episode. It's a lost interview. I did this interview in January of 2010, thought it was completely gone forever, and just happened to rediscover it today. This interview was with Dana London, and I found her through the Transition Town US social networking site. At the time, in January 2010, I was hoping to do a series of transition-related episodes featuring interviews, short interviews with people that I find right off of the Transition networking site. Some people don't post any descriptions about themselves, so I kind of ignored them, but some people went through the trouble of posting some information about themselves on their profile there at the Transition Network site, and Dana was definitely one of those that caught my attention. One of the things was, in answer to the question, how can you help the Transition Town movement, what can you teach us, what can your group teach us? Her answer was, as a longtime shamanic practitioner, adding the dimension of animism to the movement can amplify the effects of the membership's efforts and deepen their sense of the Earth's spirituality. So we get into a little bit of shamanism and what it's all about in relation to transition, and I only did like a 15-minute interview with Dana, and that was supposed to be it. We ended up chatting for about another 15 minutes after the interview, though. And that was recorded as well. And upon listening to it today, I realized there's a lot of really good stuff in the chat afterwards that I think is just as good as the main interview portion. And there really wasn't that much personal information to edit out. So while I did edit out all the personal stuff that's not appropriate for posting in the public, I'm keeping the rest in. And I think Dana and yourself will all agree that the after chat was really good. And there's a lot of stuff we covered that is just, you know, this show's all about having these deeper conversations about bigger ideas, and if you're not used to that, if you're just used to what you get on television and, you know, your co-workers at lunch and all that stuff, the things we talk about here on the show are going to sort of broaden your perspective a little bit, or they're going to scare the hell out of you and make you think that I'm crazy. In either case, I encourage you to listen to the entire episode and send me an email about what you think. My email address is thenextsteppodcast@gmail.com. I especially would like to hear from you if you don't like anything that is said on the show or something that is said on the show. If you disagree with something I say or something a guest says or just the general approach and perspective that I present you with, give me some hate mail. You know, I want something that is contentious or just negative or against what I'm saying, because I think those are the beginnings of really good conversations in which both persons will grow greatly from it. It's great to hear praise, and you can send that to thenextsteppodcast@gmail.com, but if you've got something to say in disagreement, well, I definitely want to hear it. So, with all that in mind, I'm going to get right ahead to the interview with Dana London, where we talk about shamanism, transition culture, and related topics. So you'll hear the main interview portion, we'll kind of say goodbye, I'll play a little bit of music, and then it will go to the after chat, and then that will be the show. Catch you next time. Send me an email, nextsteppodcast@thenextsteppodcast@gmail.com. Ciao.
Okay, you're listening to The Next Step, and our guest today is Dana London. And Dana is somebody I discovered off of the Transition Network website as well. And I noticed something mentioned about shamanism in her bio, and she says that she is an acupuncturist and a healer in the Chicago area and has 20-plus years' experience in shamanic work. Dana London, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jared. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and if you want to talk maybe a bit more about your bio there, and even go ahead and get into what led you here, you know, what kind of stuff happened in your past that has put you down this path that you're on now that's led you to the transition initiatives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always been interested in empowering people to be healthy because I think 95% of us don't have any genetic reasons for poor health. And, you know, always was an avid reader and had a very strong nature influence growing up. My parents had 80 acres of land up in Michigan, and I just fell in love with the earth. And so shamanic practice, you know, seemed very kind of, you know, integral to my own life experience. And, you know, just looking at how our society is presently moving, I felt the transition was an excellent way to also get involved because, you know, just working in one little piece, you know, our illness, you know, it's just so systemic that, you know, just putting needles in people, I felt, you know, just I wasn't doing enough, you know, to kind of change the collective mindset of you know, how we live and whatnot. So transition to me is a great way to kind of get more involved politically and socially, to build community, and to introduce the shamanic concepts, you know, where I think it would empower us to become more holistic, you know, in how we're going to recreate our lifestyles. Traditionally, the shamanic societies, you know, they had a person that was actually named by the community as a shaman that would intercede on the behalf of the community in case of personal illness, to seek game, and the practice is informed by conversation and relationship with spirits of nature, animal allies, even human beings can be teachers in that dimension as well. And I think where the work can become useful to, you know, an ordinary person in modern America is for people just to become aware of the spirit of their neighborhood. You know, there's trees will have a certain personality, and you know, I don't know if you've had a, you know, encounters as a young child with trees or animals even in your environment, but they can become, how would you say, a vehicle for reengaging ourselves, you know, in the life of a planet.
Yeah, definitely. I can say for myself that as a child growing up, trees were more than just, you know, simple trees. You know, animals were much more, you know, than just an animal. Mm-hmm. And I think most children probably innately have some sense of, you know, an animating force behind life. One thing, though, that I will say is shamanism is not quite so popular in this day and age. You know, you have many people holding on to old religious beliefs, certainly not as old as shamanism, of course, but you know, Christian and Muslim, the big three, and then you have a lot of people involved in scientific work. And some would say that there's just no reason to hold such a viewpoint because really they're not conscious, you know. Somebody coming from a more scientific perspective might assume such a thing. And maybe somebody from a Christian background would say, well, this sounds pagan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this sounds wrong. So what would you say to those kind of comments?
Well, there's been two books written by Jeremy Narby, The Cosmic Serpent, DNA and the Origins of Knowledge, and then subsequent to that, The Intelligence in Nature. And he was a psychologist working for the World Bank in the rainforests in Bolivia and was very interested in how the shamans came to know how to use herbs and plants. And there's one vine that has 70 varieties, but only one will induce a non-toxic paralysis. And we use it now in our own pharmaceutical compounds for anesthesia. And the shamans thought he was kind of like, they were astonished that, well, the plants told us. So it's an incredible book. You know, there quantum physicists are starting to observe intelligence. And he goes into that in a little more detail, because I think it's a perfect book, you know, for someone who wants to, you know, stay grounded in their scientific discipline and yet still be able to kind of open the membrane a little bit to allow for a, how do you say, a phenomenon that we are largely not conditioned to experience.
Hmm. So what you're saying then is that the scientific method and the scientific mindset doesn't need to be left at the door when you want to consider aspects of shamanism or just
not
shamanism.
Not at all. And science, I think, is becoming more sensitive as far as instruments and whatnot to measure the subtle fields, the interactions that take place. You know, a lot of the science that we still live by is just not true.
Yeah.
And,
well, you know, there's a lot of bogus stuff out there in any field. So,
yeah, and there's a lot of dogma. And I think what's really important to recognize, too, you know, like all these systems that we have to explain our place on the planet, our purpose and whatnot, you know, have had their origins for a couple thousand years. And we need to continue to evolve as a species. And our paradigms, our stories need to keep growing with us. And I think that science can participate a little more wholeheartedly in kind of, you know, facilitating this process instead of being like stuck, like this is the truth and this is the only truth, and you know, dogma is not healthy. It's a static system. And for health, you know, to exist on any level of any plant life, human life, there has to be a dynamic stability. And I think dogma, you know, it's just cut and dry. I mean, we can see some of these arguments of the fundamentalists, you know, the creationists. And, you know, there's just so much evidence that belies the fact that, you know, we are older than 6,000 years old here in our existence on this earth. And
yeah, well, you know, I've heard that before. Personally, people repeat that obvious. Well, let's just say that's just outright bogus.
Yeah,
6,000-year-old world. It's just, you know, you don't hear it too much anymore. I haven't, at least. Mm-hmm. But what do you say to the people who would think, well, this is kind of a sort of a step down spiritually. This is going more back to the primitive days. This is pagan. This is, you know, this is animal worship. And, What do you say to that kind of stuff?
Well, I really wouldn't say it's animal worship. I think it's recognizing that we're not the only life form on this planet. And, I mean, to let's make an example of, you know, true shamanic practice, you know, just doesn't exist for many of our societies. You know, like myself practicing in an urban area, you know, I've adapted these techniques to work, you know, with a civilized society. Mm. But some of the principles are being used, like Rudolf Steiner. He was a mystic, and his biodynamic farming clearly recognizes the forces of nature. I mean, he's using the planting guides, you know, with lunar forces and whatnot. And when you look at the food values of biodynamic food compared to organic, they're 300% greater.
Really?
Something is going on with these relationships, if you will, these attunements to cosmic forces. See, you know, I think what happened, I've given so much thought as to how it is that we've ended up, you know, really almost on the brink of self-destruction. Humans have such extraordinary capacities, and very few of us ever realize our potential. You know, we have so much that we could bring into the world, create so much good, so much creativity, and we've kind of gone, you know, into the mode of using power and force to kind of secure our existence. And we've damaged ourselves, the planet, you know, so many extinctions of animals that have occurred because of this. And I feel that somewhere along the line, we, in the Western civilization, we lost we were cast out of the Garden of Eden. Basically, indigenous societies are still living in the garden. Nature's not the enemy. It's something that they trust. It's very interesting. When the tsunami hit, was it 10 years now? In Indonesia,
yeah.
there were shamanic tribes living in a small island in the vicinity of Ceylon, and also the sea gypsies of Thailand. They vacated their areas a week before the tsunami hit, and they were not hurt at all. They knew what was happening. You know, to me, it's not being primitive. I mean, you know, in some ways, we may have to forego some of our technology because it's simply not sustainable. It's toxic. But I think it's possible to kind of bring forward these ancient ways of relationship and use it to our benefit and start to restore balance to our ecosystem.
You know, you mentioned Rudolf Steiner, and I've read some of his stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's so much out there, all of his lectures and stuff. It's very difficult to
him for a couple of lifetimes.
Yeah. He's very prolific in his speaking. I do remember him being very heavy on the idea, and he had his own interpretations of this, but basically the idea that as our evolution, our spiritual evolution, you know, because that's what he talked about, really, the spirit. Mm-hmm. And so whatever people in the audience think of that, you know, non-visible force of human animation, let's just say, mm-hmm. Was becoming more and more materialized. And he had his whole, you know, spiritual schemata for, you know, why this is, mm-hmm. talking about Ahriman and things like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was talking in the early 19th century, or in the early 20th century, and materialism has gone from, you know, what was a high point then to just extraordinary proportions now,
yeah.
where people are completely cut off from spirit, you know, just as a matter of course, it seems. And part of Steiner's ideas of avoiding that was to become more familiar with these invisible aspects of human experience. And I know Daniel Pinchbeck has read his stuff, and he relates, you know, the common psychedelic drug usage as a way to sort of loosen the spirit up and get you focusing more on that. Now, I wonder, in your shamanic work, how have psychedelic plants affected or enhanced your work, if at all?
Yes. Well, I journeyed to Peru. I was apprenticed to a native there, Teo Paredes. Actually, he's got a PhD as an anthropologist and is working to really kind of restore and to maintain, you know, the indigenous practices, not only the shamanic, but the, you know, the art of vegetable dyeing, of textile making and whatnot. And we've done ceremony with San Pedro and ayahuasca and Machu Picchu. I mean, I could talk for hours about how. But the thing is, you know, I think these plant spirits, these psychedelic
power plants.
Yeah. They, you know, you don't really need them. I think, you know, children inhabit that space anyway. And I think, you know, practicing meditation and avoiding electronics, you know, there's so much damage that's been done to our perception of subtle sounds and color. You know, we're really losing a profound capacity of consciousness because of the speed of our lives and electronics and, you know, even using Wi-Fi and cell phone, those vibrations. Dr. Mercola has a website, which is one of the most visited medical websites on the planet, mercola.com. He talks about the effect on these. It affects intracellular communication in the human body. So when our own systems as instruments are becoming, you know, clogged, if you will, you know, from these synthetic frequencies, you know, table salt, table sugar also affect the permeability of those membranes. And, you know, I think if we were to eat well and minimize that electromagnetic pollution, you know, we'd be more sensitive. I mean, we're made to perceive these things. And, you know, in our culture presently, you know, it's illegal to do. And I think if you are not able to sustain this kind of a state of awareness, you know, you could become, you know, hooked on these things too, just to kind of feel alive again.
Yeah.
So I like exercise. I'm also a practicing yogini since the age of 12, 38 years now. And there's wonderful ways to get into altered states, you know, of profound contentment and feel this unity of our life, which, you know, on a quantum level, we are not separate from each other. And yet, you know, we're conditioned to perceive ourselves as discrete and separated. And, you know, while those things are, especially in the hands of someone who's skilled in using them, they're wonderful. I mean, I like to really call people to kind of stay within the legal boundaries and become, you know, generate these states for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little effort.
I like the idea of having an experience, you know, non-normal state of consciousness and coming down, and then in some way striving to attain some sort of level again, but naturally, you know.
Yeah.
Let me get back to that expansive, you know, connecting state of mind, you know, but, you know, through things like yoga and good proper health.
Or even holotropic breath work developed by Stan Grof. Are you familiar with that stuff?
Yeah. I'm definitely well familiar with a lot of that really deep, you know, psychedelic work.
Yeah.
We're coming close to the end here, so I wanted to move on. Maybe one last question. Talk about transition. What's your experience with it so far? Is there an initiative started anywhere near you?
Well, I'm trying to get one going. There's a few people in the community that are interested in doing so, and at this point, it's still really in the beginning stages. But I think it's a fabulous idea, and I think, you know, we are the people. Now is the time. You know, we have so many resources within ourselves that are just waiting and begging to be utilized. And I think it's a human capital that's really not been recognized by our system, you know, our institutions, is ready to be used. And things can happen in a really elegant way. And I think that could give us great satisfaction.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it and doing everything I can to prime the pump, you know.
Yeah.
For certain. Well, Dana, it's been good talking to you, and I know the audience will appreciate it as well. Do you have any website or anything like that you'd like to give out for the audience?
Yes, I have a web address, ancientenergetics.com.
Okay, it's all one word?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, and then if people are interested in your work, they can go there and check it out and maybe get a hold of you if they want.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Excellent. All right, Dana London, thank you for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure. Have a good day.
much into that. I have it. You know.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, yeah, it's cool. I'm trying to take advantage of it as much as possible while we still have an internet.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. I mean,
yeah, no, it's true. If things really do collapse, you know, I've been reading too many things for too many years.
Right.
But, you know, it's just...
It's in the air, so it's something's going on. And
Yeah.
I don't know. My son opened a fortune cookie the other day, and the fortune was the best way to deal with a problem is to prevent it and avoid it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my whole thing with the healthcare. I mean, we don't have to. We have some of the worst healthcare outcomes in the industrialized world. We rank like at the bottom of the list. And all this money being spent on drugs that are toxic, you know, and I don't know if you've read any of the books by Harold Buhner.
No.
The Lost Language of Plants. He's really an incredible read. But, you know, the toxic pharmaceuticals are designed to remain active. They don't break down like herbs. And so many of them are based, you know, they're basically synthetic. They're perverted molecules of a natural substance so that they can be patented. And, you know, in some cases, you know, being concentrated, you know, it's easier to administer than taking, you know, especially with Chinese herbs, can taste really horrible.
Yeah.
But they continue to be active biologically, and they're disturbing so much of the wildlife. You know, the estrogens, the synthetic estrogens, or the endocrine disruptors that we have from plastics and whatnot. You know, one of the things that's not really being given that much consideration is the pharmaceutical stuff, women's birth control. You know, one of the prime ministers of the past in England was saying that there's measurable levels of Prozac in the River Thames.
Yeah. Well, there's they're saying in most drinking water in the United States now, there's trace amounts of, you know, 15 different pharmaceutical,
Lipitor, and it's like, whether you like it or not, unless you're doing reverse osmosis, I mean, you know, it's just...
And
this stuff is synthetically, and it's formulated out of petrochemical stuff. It's a coal tar, you know, so that's going to, when that dries up, that'll be gone too. So it's like, you know, no matter how you cut the onion up, it's just not smart.
Also, it's like these people are just extracting value, and they're just going to keep doing it until the whole shit falls down, and then they'll be in a better position, so they don't really care.
They don't care
if they just suck the country dry. Because, you're saying our healthcare is so bad. Well, you know, look at, like, I think this has a direct relation to, like, the local food movement.
Oh, absolutely,
becoming more popular.
Yeah.
You know, because that is a direct relation to health, the quality of food you eat. If your food's coming from, you know, your bananas are coming from the jungle 2,000 miles away, your burger's from some feedlot in Mexico, and it's like, it's just so bad. It's so, so bad. And they do not make it easy for you if you want to be healthy, if you want to live mostly vegetarian. And, you know, it is just not easy.
Yeah, living freely and being awake. It's a challenging thing to, and I think it's always been so, you know, it's just, one bank's customers that they cater only to multimillionaire clients, they were asked, you know, if they felt financially secure, and 68% of them said they weren't, with tens of millions of dollars. And I think it really articulates, though, you know, what we need to feel secure, I think, is knowing how to live. How to be open to life, how to like those sea gypsies, no, there's a big wave coming, get out of here. You know, really, you know, but we have to be open to be that sensitive. We have to be open, and I think we've been conditioned to shut ourselves off, to be right, you know, instead of learning how to live, we've learned how to survive, and having power and money and, you know, being able to defend ourselves has been basically how we've been conditioned to live and succeed. And I think, for to really affect a transformation, people have to be willing to just, you know, let all your barriers down. You know, you can have healthy boundaries without being armored.
Yeah, I like the idea of playful boundaries.
Yeah.
Like, we have our boundaries, but they're playful. We can talk about...
And they're intelligent. You know, they know what to say no thank you to, you know, without getting all petrified. And
Yeah, I was talking to this guy, Frank Aragona, yesterday, and we were just talking about how you just can't talk to people, you know, you can't really talk to people about things. And it's kind of like we're conditioned not to.
You
know,
to conform and to be present a certain facade.
But that's where transition to, so I was already like, a lot of the elements they incorporate are things that I already identified as areas we need to work on. So when I found Transition, I was immediately into it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they do things like the group work stuff, like the World Cafe and open source and stuff. Mm. These are things that just provide space for people to talk about shit that matters to them.
Yeah.
And we don't have that otherwise. I mean, you could teach first graders how to do a World Cafe session.
Oh, yeah.
You know? You can teach them how to do all this. Little techniques that can have a big difference, though, in the way we communicate with each other. And I don't know. I'm excited. There's a Transition meetup that started out by me recently. We got our first meeting next Sunday.
Uh-huh.
So that's going to be fun to see who shows up and
what
kind of energy is there, you know, and who's interested in what and involved and stuff already. And,
mm-hmm.
and then spreading from there, doing movie showings and flyers and newspaper articles. Like, oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. wish I would have been in high school and discovered this stuff. But,
yeah. Well, you're still young, as they say.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah.
Only as young as the last time you changed your mind, right?
Yeah, it's true. How did you get into all this stuff?
Intuition.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Just a gut feeling growing up. I realized the world isn't perfect like I thought. And, and you know, you start to see the facade crumble, and it's like, okay, something, we've got to do something then. Otherwise, I'm just going to be like everybody else and act like I don't see the shit falling around me.
Yeah, and slowly die.
Yeah, entropy. Yeah. And you know, that's what led me here. I was pretty much always looking for this, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some alternative, some way to really do this thing on our own without relying on big government.
Exactly. And that's another thing, too, that's, you know, I didn't mention with shamanism, is it's very non-hierarchical. You know, it basically encourages people to become their own authority, their own spiritual authority.
Yeah, but people think about non-hierarchy, and they think it's like anarchy and chaos, and it's like, no,
and
it's just not top-down. And I think that's conditioned reflex as well.
Exactly. And for that matter, anarchy and chaos have become identified with negative states, but chaos is an important function in transformation and growth. And anarchy in its true form is people being so mature, they don't need the police to control their behavior. They're smart enough not to do bad things.
Yeah.
I'm an anarchist myself. I mean, I believe in human potential, and I think if we learn how to live and lived wisely, we wouldn't need to have all these forces to...
Exactly. Yeah. I always say that, you know, rules are for people who need them, laws are for people who need them, not for everybody, because I certainly don't need them to be a decent human being, you know, and I don't need to know that killing is wrong. I don't, you know, need somebody to tell me I can't
take this. Scared away from behaving badly, with a threat of punishment.
Yeah, like, I mean, when is the correction coming?
it's hopefully underway right now.
Yeah, I just hope I'm prepared for it in my family when it does hit, you know. That's all you can hope for, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, praying on a daily basis, you know, really visualizing the potential that human beings have actually manifesting itself. You know, that I don't know if you've read any of those books by, what's his name? The Isaiah Effect.
I've heard of it.
Zero Point. But prayer should basically be like an affirmation instead of like, I want to be rich tomorrow, I am rich now, you know, whatever. But to really, to visualize, you know, what you see is our human best being in existence at this moment and not, you know, not get dragged down by the news, because it's really hard sometimes, I think, to stay clean from all the heavy shit that's out there right now.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but to really, you know, emanate a vibration that's really good, because, you know, we have the capacity. It's all within us right now. And, you know, and I think we've also been conditioned to be scared, keep our mouths shut, don't rock the boat. And we need, you know, in some ways, I think we really needed this crisis to break the, you know, the past chains of conditioning.
That is the paradox. And it seems to be, this isn't contradictory, this is paradox, which implies a higher level of order, you know, because I see that too. It's, man, this sucks, you know, that, you know, people are losing their homes and their jobs and, you know, they're out on the streets and it's a lot of pain, suffering, inconvenience, but at the same time, it's disrupting people's routines.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, what the root effect or the root cause that is having the effect that of people kind of looking around, snapping out of the bubble and saying, oh, okay, how can we do this? You know, and it's disrupting routines. And And it seems for the masses, the only way to do that is through catastrophe, unfortunately.
I kind of agree with that, but unfortunately. And without a real faith, you know, that the universe is kind, that the earth is, you know, wonderful, and she's our mother, you know, we distrust big shifts because, you know, we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And, to just see this as a great opportunity and do what we can to create a more functional, equitable society.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dana, I got to get going. It was good talking to you, definitely, and I like staying in touch.
And if you guys, you know, if your group out there ever wants to have me come out and do a little workshop, teach basic journeying techniques and, you know, just simple stuff just to, you know, enhance your awareness of the environment and how alive it is, I'd be happy to do so.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm definitely thinking in the summertime we'll probably have some activities we'll host, things like that. So
yeah.
I would love for that because it's right up my alley, obviously. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed you were looking for a drumming circle, too. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of shamanic circles around here.
Yeah, it's pretty dry here, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the old Illinois Midwest area, it seems you got to go out to the coasts.
Yeah.
Mostly California, but, I mean, there's people out there. I don't have time for much stuff anyway. I have two little guys.
Oh.
Two little boys. That's my weekends, and then work on the week, you know.
Yeah, kind of takes it up. Yeah, and just journeying with a tape doesn't have the same effect as if you're in a group.
Yeah.
So, well, it'll change.
Yeah.
It's a matter of time. Well, again, it was a real pleasure, and thanks for inviting me to talk.
Where's your mouth?